So Alain and Denis ask us very interesting questions about what differs and what is similar between development and regeneration. For me and for other people, the main difference concerned the needs for recruitment of progenitor cells or cell dedifferentiation in adult regeneration compared to development. The second difference is a scaling difference. As Patricia already told us, even if the same signaling pathways are involved in the two phenomena, the scale of the objects needs an important adaptation. And I will come to this point at the end of my presentation. The third difference concerns the presence of blood vessels, immune system, and nerve in the adult tissue. And these things are not present in the development, at least during early development. It has been demonstrated that the adult fin regeneration can occur without blood vessels. The immune system will be afforded in other talks during these days. And I will concentrate my topics on the role of nerve during regeneration and development. And more precisely, I will focus on the role of nerve and the crosstalk between nerve and redox signaling in cell differentiation during development and cell dedifferentiation during adult regeneration. So a few words first about redox signaling. Recently, Helmut Sees proposed the new concept of oxidative eustress in opposition to oxidative distress, which corresponds to what we know when with large amount of ROS or adrenaline peroxide in presence of metals can induce oxidative defect. At low level of adrenaline peroxide, and more importantly, in absence of metal, adrenaline peroxide can induce proper signaling. The redox signaling is based on a reversible oxidation of cysteine and methionine and on presence of short-lived oxidized lipid. We have very few tools to study oxidized lipid in vivo, but a lot to study the oxidation state of cysteine. So depending on adrenaline peroxide level, cysteine can adopt different stage of oxidation, the sulfenic acid form can be considered as a hub for cysteine modification with the formation of disulfide bond, glutathionylation, or acylation. If we compare the redox code to the phosphorylation one, we know very well, for the phosphorylation code, we have a consensus target, which is very well known. The regulatory enzyme are known, and the answer is a binary switch. For the redox code, there are so far no established consensus. The predictability is very poor. For the same amount of adrenaline peroxide, the reactivity of a given cysteine will depend on its physiochemical environment. And in addition, the answer is graded. So for a given cysteine, oxidative state can have specific signaling properties. Redox signaling depends on the amount of adrenaline peroxide and the adrenaline peroxide homeostasis in vivo. So adrenaline peroxide, there are two major sites of adrenaline peroxide in cells, the mitochondria and the plasma membrane. I will focus during my talk to the plasma membrane. And at the level of the plasma membrane, adrenaline peroxide is produced by a complex containing NADPH oxidase and superoxidismutase. This production occurs outside of the cells, and to signalings, adrenaline peroxide needs to come into the cells through aquaporins. The homeostasis of hydrogen peroxide depends on its degradation, mainly by a dedicated enzyme, the catalase. The complexity of the redox signaling is due to the interdependence of hydrogen peroxide level with the functioning of the electron transfer machinery and the metabolism of the cell. And you can see in this scheme that hydrogen peroxide can be used by glutathione peroxidase or by pyriredoxine, which can by themselves modify cysteine target amino acid. So to study the function of redox signaling in regeneration and development, we first used a dedicated ratiometric sensor developed by Seva Belousov. This sensor contained a fluorescent protein linked to OxyR, which is a bacterial sensor for hydrogen peroxide. In presence of hydrogen peroxide, a disulfide bond is formed between the two moiety of OxyR, and this modification modified the spectral properties of the YFP. The ratiometric analysis of the fluorescence gave us an indication of the concentration of hydrogen peroxide. In blue color, low level of hydrogen peroxide, white color, we are overscale of hydrogen peroxide. So we first made a transgenic zebrafish expressing this ratiometric sensor ubiquitously in the cytoplasm of the cells. And I was amazed by the pattern of hydrogen peroxide during development. I'm still amazed by this image, I have to say. All these pictures are presented with the same color scale, meaning that the somitogenesis in zebrafish occurs at very high level of hydrogen peroxide. After the somitogenesis, we can have dynamic hotspot of hydrogen peroxide, mainly in the nervous system structure. But by 3 days, almost all tissue came back to a redox, a very low redox level. And by 3 days, the zebrafish development is finished. The fish is swimming, is eating by itself, and everything is gone. And the tissue will stay on a very low level of hydrogen peroxide for life, except after injury. So just a few details of the kind of pattern we can get. For example, for the art development, which is an exception, for the art development, we have a high level of hydrogen peroxide from beginning in the art field during somitogenesis to the heart beating. So the heart developed for all the development with a high level of hydrogen peroxide. We can observe some very nice gradient of hydrogen peroxide in specific structure. For example, here, the midbrain-in-brain boundary, they are transient. We have hotspot of production of hydrogen peroxide in the neural tube at the time of motor neuron maturation, or in the optic tectum at the time of RGC projection. We have very dynamic patterns. For example, during somitogenesis, the end of the somitogenesis signed the disappearance of this hydrogen peroxide gradient at the tailbot. And another example, during the retina, we have no pattern in the proliferative epithelium, the very nice pattern of hydrogen peroxide in the differentiated retina. So in summary, it has been now demonstrated by us and others in different species that cell differentiation and morphogenesis go along with important hydrogen peroxide modifications. So what about regeneration now? So I'm using the adult caudolphin as a model. First of all, because it's a very simple model. It's flat enough to go under the microscope in living fish. And it's a very rapid mechanism. So just to summarize the first step of regeneration, after amputation, we observe a rapid wound closure and the formation of a wound epidermis. At the same time, some cells go to cell cycle and proliferate and migrate to the wound epidermis to form the blastema, a group of cells from which all the missing structure will be reformed. These recruited cells correspond mainly to differentiation, but we can't exclude that some stem cells are recruited at the same time. In the adult fish, we can score for redox species with a fluorescent chemical probe or with our ratiometric probe for hydrogen peroxide, and amputation induces a very nice gradient of hydrogen peroxide all along the tissue. If we quantify the hydrogen peroxide production after amputation, we measure a sustained production of hydrogen peroxide for all the time of cell recruitment and a rapid drop-off when the differentiation is off. If we compare this production to a wounding, you can see here that after wounding, the production of hydrogen peroxide is for a burst, but is not sustained. So to study the function of hydrogen peroxide during development and regeneration, we need the tools to manipulate this molecule. So we developed different strategies, pharmacological treatments, and encoded protein, which can decrease or increase hydrogen peroxide level in vivo. So just quickly, we can use the catalase, the enzyme which in vivo degrades hydrogen peroxide. This enzyme can be addressed in different compartments, and the expression of this enzyme in one cell decreases the level of hydrogen peroxide. We can also use the purified catalase added in cell medium, in cell culture, to reduce the level of hydrogen peroxide. I told you that hydrogen peroxide is produced outside of the cell. So if you add a sink outside of the cells, you reduce the inside contents of hydrogen peroxide. And we can use inhibitor for NADPH oxidase to reduce the level of hydrogen peroxide. To enhance the level of hydrogen peroxide, we use the D-amino acid oxidase, which is an enzyme present in yeast, which produced hydrogen peroxide and need D-amino acid. And the D-amino acid are not present in vertebrate, so when this enzyme is introduced in vertebrate, the production of hydrogen peroxide is inducible and depends on the addition of D-alanine. It's very fast, as the response after addition of D-alanine is very quick, a few minutes, and is quantitative, as the level of hydrogen peroxide produced depends on the quantity of D-alanine provided to the system. We can combine both the catalase and the D-alanine to dynamically modulate hydrogen peroxide level in cell culture. So now we have the tools to modulate hydrogen peroxide levels, and we can ask the questions of the impact of this molecule and the redox states on cell differentiation. So I choose the retina differentiation. First of all, because the retina develops at the surface of the embryo, so we can acquire very nice images with a good quality. And the second reason is all the step of differentiation in the process of the retina differentiation are separate in different compartments, and we have specific molecular markers for these different compartments. So during development, differentiation starts on the middle of the retina and spread distally, and leave the CMZ, the ciliary marginal zone, which contain one compartment with only stem cells and progenitor cells, one compartment with cycling RPC, and one compartment with committed RPC. So if we look at hydrogen peroxide during the process of differentiation, you can see here that differentiated part of the retina harbor lower level of hydrogen peroxide than the CMZ. Homeostasis of hydrogen peroxide depends on production and degradation. So we look at the expression of superoxidase mutase 2 and catalase in the retina. The superoxidase mutase expression at the RNA level coincide with the Rx2 domain, the stem cells domain, while the catalase expression domain corresponds to the atonal 7 domain, which corresponds to committed cell. So then we can ask if the expression of the catalase is a consequence of differentiation, or if the catalase can induce differentiation in this system. So to address these questions, we induce a mosaic expression of catalase in the domain of the stem cells of the retina. As you can appreciate here, the expression of the catalase, here tagged with the RFP, induce a reduction of hydrogen peroxide in these specific cells in the Rx2 domain. So that was expected. If we overexpress the catalase, we reduce hydrogen peroxide. What was more surprising is the expression of the catalase induced a differentiation of those cells into the stem cells compartment. And we can score for the differentiation with the atonal 7 marker, or a marker for photoreceptor. So catalase expression is sufficient to induce cell differentiation in the stem cell compartment in the retina. By contrast, in a catalase mutant, cells keep the faculty to divide in the whole retina, while in the wild type, proliferation is localized only in the CNZ at the same stage. So because of time constraint, I'm not going to go into detail in this story. It's now in press, in DevCell. It will be out next week. I will go straight to the conclusion. So in this work, I show you that hydrogen peroxide, this work demonstrates that hydrogen peroxide is responsible for the oxidation of a short-lived lipid. And this short-lived lipid inhibits HDAC1. So in the stem cell compartment, HDAC1 is inhibited by this short-lived lipid. As soon as the level of hydrogen peroxide decreases, and probably by catalase activity, this lipid is not oxidized anymore, which allows the activity of HDAC1. So my first conclusion will be hydrogen peroxide is highly dynamic during cell differentiation and morphogenesis, and hydrogen peroxide plays an essential role in stem cell differentiation, at least in the retina. So now, what about adult regeneration? During regeneration, we have to go all the way back to progenitor state. So I remind you that hydrogen peroxide is produced during cell differentiation, and in addition, hydrogen peroxide is present at the level of the plasma membrane in the epithelium after amputation. So in this series of experiments, we use a pharmaceutical approach to reduce the level of hydrogen peroxide. We inhibit the NADPH oxidase. And if we buff adult fish in this inhibitor, we reduce the level of hydrogen peroxide after amputation. And then we can ask the consequence of this reduction in the process of regeneration. The reduction of hydrogen peroxide induces a reduction in the overall cell proliferation, and 3 days post-amputation, a reduction in size of the regenerated part. So it seems that hydrogen peroxide is important to launch the regenerative program. In the adult caudolphin, when we amputate the caudolphin, we cut at the same time all the nerve fibers. So in the caudolphin, it's only sensory neurons, And axons regenerate in parallel to the appendage. So if we look at the axon behavior after amputation, we observe first a defasciculation of the axons, then the tip of the axon fragmented and goes to the classical Wallerian degeneration. What is curious in fish is the speed of the axon regrowth after the Wallerian degeneration. By 24 hours post-amputation, the axons have already reached the wound epidermis. So it's a very fast process. It's well known that androgen peroxide stimulates axon growth in vivo. So then we ask the questions, if androgen peroxide produced by amputation mainly in the epithelium can be involved in the axon regeneration. So we can stain for the axon after amputation, and you can appreciate here, and it's quantified, that the reduction of androgen peroxide by inhibition of NADPH oxidase inhibit axon regeneration. That was not a surprise, but this inhibition of NADPH oxidase also inhibit the defasciculation of the axon, which is a first step for regeneration. So that means that androgen peroxide is involved in the very early step of axon regeneration. To summarize our finding, I show you that after amputation, we observe a sustained production of adrenal peroxide that involves NADPH oxidase, and that launched the regenerative program. I'm not going to go into detail. It's all published now, and I would like to go on to now, what is responsible for NOX activation and adrenal peroxide production after amputation? Well, you all probably know the importance of innervation for regeneration, as it was nicely demonstrated by Jeremy Brooks quite a long time ago now, that nerves are essential for regeneration, and that the tissue which have been innervated once need nerve to regenerate. So we ask, could nerves play a role in the production of adrenal peroxide after amputation? To answer this question, we design a denervation assay. The adult caudolphin is innervated by two branches of nerve, one on the dorsal part and one on the ventral part. It's possible to cut one of these branches. And in this condition, we have half the fin without nerve, and we can control the absence of nerve by acetylated tubulin staining, and half of fin, which is innervated, and serve as a control. If we do that, we abolish blastema formation, as you can see here, 3 days post-amputation. The denervated part doesn't grow, and the control part form a nice blastema. So what about redox signals now? So in an uninjured tissue, the denervation induced a burst of hydrogen peroxide. So the absence of nerve go with an enhancement of hydrogen peroxide. After amputation, we observe a reverse effect. After amputation, in the control part, we have an enhancement of adrenal peroxide, which never occurs in absence of nerve. So we then conclude that nerves are responsible for adrenal peroxide homeostasis in adult fin and after amputation. We can partially rescue the denervation by bathing the fish in adrenal peroxide. I would like to do this experiment. A referee asked us for that. I never think it was possible to bath the fish in a huge amount of adrenal peroxide for almost 24 hours. Anyway, we did that. to get the paper accepted. And the rescue is not full, but we get a rescue at the proliferation step. So as you can see here, the red mark indicates the denuverted site. In the control part of the fish in the control water, the control tank, hydrogen peroxide is present in gradient on the distal part of the fin, and we observe proliferation in this part. We do not observe proliferation in the denuverted part. If we buff the fish in hydrogen peroxide now is present in the whole medium, and is sufficient to enhance proliferation in the whole caudal fin, and is sufficient to enhance proliferation in the denuverted part. So, the nerve fascicle is quite a complex structure. So what in the nerve can control hydrogen peroxide level in surrounding tissue? Well, the immune cells is probably a part of the answer, and maybe Simone Di Giovanni tomorrow will address this point. We focus on Schwann cell, because it's known in different contexts that glial cells and Schwann cells nerve the axon during the whole life of the nerve. So shortly after amputation, Schwann cells are activated, and in zebrafish, the first mark of activation is a re-expression of SOX10 and hedgehog. Hedgehog is a well-known morphogen involved in many processes, and we bet that maybe it was one signal secreted by the nerve responsible for redox regulation in surrounding tissue. So to manipulate sonic hedgehog pathway in adult, we use the cyclopamine, which blocks the signal, the pathway. So cyclopamine reduced hydrogen peroxide level after amputation, and cyclopamine reduced the global activity of superoxide dismutase after amputation. So it seems that sonic hedgehog controls hydrogen peroxide level via NADPH superoxide dismutase activation. With no surprise, if we use the cyclopamine and check for axon regeneration, the regeneration doesn't occur, and we get an inhibition with the same extent we obtain with the inhibitor for the NADPH oxidase. So sonic hedgehog and hydrogen peroxide stimulate axon growth. Conversely, the inhibition of hydrogen peroxide production reduces the number of sonic hedgehog positive cells in the caudal fin, in the regenerating caudal fin. So my third conclusion will be about the involvement of sonic hedgehog in the induction of the regenerative program. So I show you that sonic hedgehog stimulates hydrogen peroxide production, probably via the NADPH superoxide dismutase complex, and in turn, hydrogen peroxide activates the expression of sonic hedgehog. So we have an auto-amplifying process which is controlled by a negative feedback loop made by axon growth. Hydrogen peroxide stimulates the growth of lesionate axons, but axons reduce the level of hydrogen peroxide when repaired. So in this system, so in the adult caudal fin, the source of sonic hedgehog is activated Schwann cells. But there are no activated Schwann cells during early development. So what is responsible for hydrogen peroxide production and the nice gradient I show you during development? We ask if sonic hedgehog could be involved in adrenaline peroxide patterns during embryonic development, and if, conversely, adrenaline peroxide can regulate sonic hedgehog activity during development. To answer these questions, we use two strategies to reduce sonic hedgehog activity. The first one is a chemical one with the cyclopamine, and the second one is a sonic hedgehog mutant. And both strategies end up with a reduction of adrenaline peroxide in the developing embryo. 24 hours post-fertilization, you can appreciate, especially in the trunk, a reduction of adrenaline peroxide in the sonic hedgehog mutant. So yes, during development, sonic hedgehog can modulate adrenaline peroxide level. I go back in cell culture to monitor the effect of sonic hedgehog overexpression on redox level. If we transfect cells with sonic hedgehog, we induced an enhancement of adrenaline peroxide level in those cells. And if we look into detail at the localization of the of a tag sonic hedgehog in this cell culture, and at the same time at the level of the adrenaline peroxide with the hyper probe, which in this case is bound to the plasma membrane, you can appreciate that we have an enhancement of adrenaline peroxide in site where sonic hedgehog accumulate. And this site correspond to filopodia, or activated filopodia, or cytonem, some cell protrusion. In this cell culture, we can manipulate adrenaline peroxide level and look at sonic hedgehog secretion or the secretion of a control protein, in this case, GFP. The modification of adrenaline peroxide level has no effect on basic secretion, in this case, GFP, but have a drastic effect on the secretion of sonic hedgehog. So adrenaline peroxide inhibits sonic hedgehog secretion, in cell culture at least. So as you may know, the secretion of sonic hedgehog is quite a complicated journey. First, sonic hedgehog is secreted by traveling through the ER to the Golgi. But then the protein is internalized by a mechanism which is still in debate. And then this protein migrate to the filopodia, or cytonyms, and are secreted at the tip of the cytonyms. We can recapitulate the secretion of sonic hedgehog in cell culture or in living zebrafish embryo. And you can, for example, here see a cell expressing sonic hedgehog delivering sonic hedgehog in neighbor cells via filopodia. Or in vivo, in zebrafish, sonic hedgehog traveling in filopodia or cell extension. What about adrenaline peroxide and filopodia? When we start to play with the hypersensor, we got this kind of image in cell culture. So the adrenaline level are highly heterogeneous at the subcellular level in cell, and it's much higher in part of plasma membrane corresponding to cell protrusion with or without filopodia. So we quantify, so we play with the tools I described at the beginning of my presentation, so we can manipulate the level of adrenaline peroxide, precisely score the level with the dedicated sensor, and score for filopodia. And in cell culture, as well as in zebrafish development, the number and the size of the filopodia depend on the concentration of adrenaline peroxide in the cytoplasm. So there are very good correlation between the level of adrenaline peroxide and the size of the filopodia. So I come back to Sonic Hedgehog. And I would like to propose that Sonic Hedgehog can be instrumental to shape its own gradient. Sonic Hedgehog secretion enhance adrenaline peroxide level, which induce filopodia formation, and filopodia allow a further Sonic Hedgehog spreading. At the same time, adrenaline peroxide inhibits Sonic Hedgehog expression, so reduce the secretion of Sonic Hedgehog at the starting part of the gradient. So I would like to propose to discussion today a new model for morphogens spreading, in which, because we observe very nice gradient of adrenaline peroxide during development, which for sure do not involve Sonic Hedgehog. Sonic Hedgehog is not present everywhere and is not doing everything, even if he's doing a lot during development. So it must be something else regulated this gradient. So the idea I propose today is that morphogens can modulate their own gradient and modulate the shape and the distribution of adrenaline peroxide in vivo by modulation of filopodia length and in back adrenaline peroxide inhibited the morphogen secretion. So for sure, I have not today a definitive answer to this proposition, but I would like to give you a flavor of where we are. For that, I jump to another morphogen, engrailed. Alain Prochian, more than 20 years ago, demonstrated that homeoproteins can transfer from cell to cell and behave as morphogen. So with Alain Joliot, we used the engrail-2 as a prototype of homeoprotein to study this intercellular transfer. And we recently addressed the questions of the regulation of homeoprotein transfer by hydrogen peroxide. So in the paracrine activity of homeoprotein, in that case engrail-2, we can look at the secretion and at the internalization. We can use the tools, the D-amino acid oxidase in presence of D-alanine or the catalase to enhance or to reduce the level of adrenaline peroxide. And the result we got is that an enhancement of adrenaline peroxide stimulate engrail secretion, and a reduction of adrenaline peroxide stimulate engrail internalization. In addition, if we add purified engrail protein on cell culture to study internalization, we observe a strong induction of adrenaline peroxide and filopodia formation, because we know now it goes with, by engrail internalization. The engrail protein contains different cysteine, but one of them is very well conserved during evolution and is present in a sequence involved in the regulation of engrail transfer from cell to cell. So we mutated this cysteine and studied the secretion and the internalization of this mutated form of engrail. The mutation of the cysteine reduced the secretion and reduced the internalization. So it seems that this amino acid, which can be a direct target for redox signaling, is involved in both secretion and internalization. And moreover, this mutant is not able anymore to induce the increase of hydrogen peroxide during internalization. So, for engrailed, again, engrailed internalization induces an increase of hydrogen peroxide, which induces an extension of filopodia, We still don't know if N-grail can spread through Philopodia. It's ongoing on the lab. At the same time, hydrogen peroxide inhibits internalization in the same cell, but activates secretion of the cell. So that's, we have the some tools to make a gradient. Before to stop, I come back to the scaling difference during development and regeneration. And I would like to propose that in both cases, signals have to be spread. And I propose that during development, signal spreading can be made by Philopodia, so at the distance of cell protrusion. But in adult, the distance is too long. And I propose that the signal can be spread via axons. To stop, I would like to thank people of the group. First of all, Alain Joliot, who co-head the team with me, and our two astonishing PhD students, Marion Tovin, Irène Amblard, who perform all the unpublished experiments I presented today. I would like to thank the collaborators, Seva Belousov, with him we produce sensor and manipulators of hydrogen peroxide level, and Filippo Delbene for the story on retinal differentiation. And I would like to deeply thank Alain Prochian for having welcomed me and welcomed my team at the creation of this institute, and for making the research so great in this institute. Merci, Alain.